Gift-giving season is here, and for the military history lover on your list, check out my book about the Black Medal of Honor recipients of World War II. Immortal Valor chronicles these timeless heroes' life journeys through all the pain and struggle until their ultimate triumphs. I hope you purchase the book or audiobook, which is available now in stores and online. Coming up this holiday weekend, be sure to be with us for our encore presentation, Christmas 1942. The program features Edward R. Murrow, Bob Hope, news reports on Christmas at the front, and much, much more. I hope you'll check it out this weekend. Christmas 1942 and happy holidays. Welcome to Hamilton at War, our 12-part weekly podcast series that brings to life in vivid historical and emotional detail Alexander Hamilton's Revolutionary War service. I'm Robert Child, and I hope you enjoy this latest installment.
Hamilton at War, written by Robert Child and narrated by James Gillis. The Road to Monmouth. Washington's column moved slowly forward in the blazing late June sun. The men were mosquito-bitten, exhausted, and engulfed in the stifling, humid New Jersey air during one of the hottest summers in memory. Hamilton, who had ridden ahead, was drenched in sweat. He returned out of breath to meet Washington on the road and saluted. "Sir, I've just left General Lafayette. On General Lee's request, I ordered his men to engage British horsemen. There may be opportunities to engage their advancing infantry." Washington, restraining his obvious excitement, responded, "Quite right," as he adjusted in the saddle, straining to listen down the road to the expected sounds of battle. Hamilton turned as well. There was no sound of engagement, only silence. Their attention then was drawn to a man on horseback riding towards them slowly. He was not in Continental uniform. As the man reached Washington's position, the general questioned him, "Sir, any news of the battle ahead?" The soldier, an independent militiaman, spoke plainly to the commander of the army. "Well, all I know is that our boys are in retreat." "Retreat? Sir, that cannot be so. I am a militia soldier, and I saw the Continental troops advance and retreat with my own eyes," he said as he pointed to his face. Washington clenched his teeth. "Sir, you avail yourself a soldier and spread these false rumors? I've a good mind to have you whipped." Hamilton then looked further ahead and pointed. "Look, there!" More soldiers were straggling down the road. These men were in Continental uniforms. Washington spurred his horse ahead to meet them. "Why are you men advancing down this road?" A soldier near the front responded, "We're on the retreat, sir. All of General Lee's detachment is retreating." Washington turned scarlet. "Retreat?" Hamilton rode up to join Washington. He was dumbstruck.
"Colonel, maintain the column advance," Washington ordered. "I will ride ahead to General Lee."
Washington kicked his horse hard and galloped forward. In a clearing, surrounded by Continental soldiers streaming past them, Washington, with arms in the air, pointing, exhorting, rode up and down past a lanky officer who stood motionless. Audible curses floated across the field as Hamilton arrived with Washington's column. Hamilton rode forward towards the lanky officer and Washington. Tall, thin, 46-year-old former British soldier turned Virginia planter, General Charles Lee's face was crimson. Washington finished dressing his subordinate down in a royal fashion by saying that he was very sorry Lee had undertook the command if he had no intention to fight the enemy. Lee finally replied to his commanding general, keeping his eyes forward. "Sir, I myself shall be the last man to leave the field." Hamilton, between the heat and his excitement, had worked himself into battle frenzy. Washington turned his horse and rode past Hamilton to his column. Hamilton drew his sword wild-eyed and said, "And I shall stay here with you, General Lee, and die with you. Let us all die rather than retreat." Lee narrowed his eyes and looked up at Hamilton like he had lost his mind. 600 advancing redcoats were now met by Washington's troops at Monmouth. who quickly formed a battle line. Washington rode back and forth close behind his men's line, seemingly in between the deadly British bullets. Hamilton stared at him from a distance. Washington shouted,
"Forward, forward, my brave boys! We command the field this day! Drive them back to hell!"
British soldiers had begun to take hits. Their line faltered, gaps opened up. The Continentals took hits as well, but remained steady as Washington continued to ride behind them. More American troops then poured in from the woods to push back the British line. Hamilton, envious, continued to watch his general press the attack. Hamilton locked on the vision of the British beginning to retreat and said aloud, "I must join the attack! I must join the attack!" He spurred his horse forward towards the battle line, galloping as hard and fast as he could ride. He shouted,
"Forward on, men! Forward!"
Another volley sounded and smoke rose at the battle line. Two stray British musket balls slammed into Hamilton's horse's chest, and it let out a sickening shriek. Bucking the horse threw Hamilton forward, head over heels, onto the ground, into a cloud of dust. Pulling himself up on his elbows, Hamilton shook his head in disbelief as he watched his horse keel over on its side, dead. At that moment, British horns sounded retreat, and a victory cheer rose up from the American line. That night, General Lee sat alone in his tent. A camp lantern revealed that his uniform was askew. He stared into the half-drunk glass of whiskey in his hand. A nearly empty bottle sat prominent on the rustic table beside him. Finally, Lee threw his glass on the ground, shattering it. Several tents away, Hamilton sat at a wooden desk with his leg bandaged and wrote Eliza by candlelight. "My dearest Eliza, forgive my delay in reply to your letter of Tuesday last, but I have good reason. Our army has just secured the most magnificent victory. The squeal is we beat the enemy and wounded at least 1,000 of their best troops. I convalesce from an inconsiderate wound, but I find more and more I am spoiled for a military man." Eliza, in the Schuyler parlour, read the letter Hamilton had sent from Monmouth. She wore the face of a woman deeply in love. "My health and comfort make me long to be with you. Think of me with as much tenderness as I do you until we are together again. Your most affectionate admirer, Alex." After the battle at Monmouth, Washington moved his headquarters northward towards New York, residing by December 1778 in a village called Elizabethtown. General Lee's anger over his Monmouth dressing down had continued to fester. In his office, Washington clutched a newspaper tightly. The title of the main article read, "Vindication to the Public" by Charles Lee. Through the outside door of headquarters, holding a copy of the same Pennsylvania Packet newspaper, came John Lawrence at a quick pace. He encountered and questioned Hamilton. "Has he seen it?" From the office room towards the rear of headquarters came the distinct voice of their commander cursing. Next came the sound of a chair being knocked over. Hamilton turned from the sound to Lawrence. "I'm afraid so." "Lee, that man is a vermin of the lowest order. He attempts to restore his honour by slandering his general. What can be done, Hamilton?" "I do not believe His Excellency will stoop to reply to Lee's attacks, however groundless they may be." Washington continued to yell in the other room,
"Toad eaters!"
Lawrence resolved, "Then it falls upon us. You must take up the pen, Hamilton, strike Lee back with your mastery of prose. Invoke the pen of Junius." "I fear in this case I cannot. I was too close to the situation on the field. It would appear hollow. Then the only avenue left is the field of honour. But I am certain His Excellency will not sanction it." He may not sanction it, but I am of the opinion he will not obstruct it either.
Lorenz returned Hamilton's smile. I shall demand satisfaction this very afternoon. Will you act as my second?
Without hesitation, Hamilton responded.
Elizabethtown, New Jersey, Point, No Point Road. At 3:30 at the edge of a winter field, Hamilton, Lorenz, Lee, and Lee's second, Major Edwards, stood in a group. Hamilton, next to Lorenz, pulled his sword, walked 6 paces away, and planted it. Edwards did the same near Lee. Hamilton handed a curved pistol from a small rosewood box to Lorenz and stepped away. Lee now held his weapon as well. Major Edwards said,
"Gentlemen, backs to one another, cock and elevate pistols."
Both Lee and Lorenz complied. Hamilton was as excited as a schoolboy watching a sporting match. He shifted his weight from side to side. Edwards took his scarf in hand.
"Gentlemen, when my scarf reaches the ground, the duel shall commence. I shall count off 6 paces, and you will turn and discharge."
Edwards raised the scarf, opened his hand, and let the scarf float to the ground. Lee and Lorenz, watching, readied to begin their paces. Edwards quickly stepped clear of the two duelists while Hamilton continued to fidget. Edwards had begun his count.
1, 2, 3.
Lorenz's face remained calm, resolute as he walked. Lee's face twitched, anticipating the count every step as Edward continued.
4, 5, 6.
Both men turned simultaneously and fired. Smoke hung in the echoed moment. Blood now seeped onto Lee's side as he dropped to one knee. Lorenz had begun to ready his pistol for a second discharge. Lee raised a hand.
"Sir, I am wounded."
All men rushed to Lee. Lorenz reached out a hand. "Sir, may I assist you?" Lee looked down at his wound again.
"The wound is inconsiderable, less than I imagined. I will prepare for a second discharge."
Lorenz backed away as Hamilton jumped in to face Lee.
"Sir, that would be taking this transaction beyond the length it should go."
Major Edwards also added,
"Sir, General Lee, I agree."
Lee was adamant.
"No, no, I am tender to my opponent's honour. There should be a second."
Lorenz was indignant.
"I agree this matter is not resolved." He glared down at the scoundrel, Lee.
Lee looked at his side, which had begun to bleed more, then looked up with beseeching eyes. Hamilton said,
"Sir, unless this affair is inspired by personal enmity, it ought not to be pursued any further."
Lee said weakly,
"No."
As Edwards concurred more strenuously,
"I agree the affair, sir, should terminate as it stands."
Relief crossed Lee's face as he rose to his feet with Edwards' help.
"I am confident in the honour of you gentlemen concerned as seconds, and am willing to comply with what you have so coolly determined."
Hamilton and Edwards looked to Lorenz, who released the cock of his pistol, and said,
"I consent to the same. This matter is concluded."
Lorenz then looked to Hamilton with approval for the way he managed to preserve the honour of all. That night, Hamilton found sleeping space near the fireplace in headquarters. His mind replayed the events of the day, and he soon drifted off to sleep, but beheld a terrible dream. In his dream, Hamilton saw himself standing intently over a man on his knees looking down at his wounds. Hamilton thought it was Lee, but Hamilton began to sense something was odd. He turned in the dream and saw an older man dressed in civilian clothes and 2 other men walking away with their backs to the man on the ground. One of the men turned, looked back, and smiled an evil grin. Hamilton's face revealed confusion as he watched these men leave, then looked back down at the wounded kneeling man. The man finally looked up. To Hamilton's horror,
It was his own self, older, ashen, and near death.
Hamilton bolted up from the dream, gasping for breath. He rubbed his eyes, trying to shake the terrible vision.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thanks for listening. I'm Robert Child, and be with us next week for another exciting installment of Hamilton at War, only on Point of the Spear.
Music licensed from audioblocks.com. Point of the Spear is produced by RSC Media Group.